deep in the heart of Texas. At the edge of the Texas Hill Country and the Llano Uplift, between the Colorado and San Gabriel Rivers, near the intersection of the Chisholm Trail. Welcome to Serenity Ranch. I am your host, J.W. Spencer, and this is the Back Porch Podcast. Howdy. Today is Sunday, May 20th, and welcome to the Back Porch. Have you guys seen or heard the grandma selfie video on the internet? It's gone viral. I'd like to play this for you, and I want you to listen to this, and it's really funny, and I'll tell you why. This kind of hits a sweet spot for me, but listen to this.
April? Why did my phone turn into a mirror? I'm looking at my face, and oh my. Look at all these wrinkles. You've got to be kidding me.
It's just your camera. You probably have it switched up. Take a selfie. You have it on selfie mode, Grandma.
A selfie? What the heck is a selfie?
It's a picture.
This is supposed to be a smartphone. It's not that smart. I want my flip phone back.
Well, what are you trying to do?
I'm not quite sure.
You pushed something to get it to do the camera. Are you trying to make a call?
I don't know.
What's wrong? Grandma, you're cute right now.
I'm so confused.
Take a picture.
Of what?
You. You have your camera on.
I'm supposed to take a picture over there.
Oh, my goodness. You're taking a video. So,
that gave me a chuckle because a few months ago, I went through something very similar with my father, who's had a flip phone for the past, 20 years. He and my mother both had flip phones, and they were prepaid flip phones. My dad didn't like being on a contract. About 3 months ago, he purchased an iPhone. After he saw me doing some things with my iPhone, specifically last year when my mother was sick, she went into hospice and she died last year, near Mother's Day. And at the time, though, I had my phone there, and I was able to send out group texts, and my father witnessed me text-to-speech, text-call via voice. He witnessed me using Bluetooth and a phone, calling my wife. And he was like, you know, I think maybe it's time for me to get a smartphone. And so my dad finally, a year later, he finally, you know, he gritted his teeth and he went to the Apple store. He hates going to the Apple store because it's nuts. He's old school and a very utilitarian man. And he has the equivalent of a PhD in computer science. So, you know, this is hard for my dad to do, but he admitted, you know, I need to get a new phone. I need to, you know, the flip phone his era has passed. And within a week, he had said two of the phrases that this grandma said, oh, I want my flip phone back. And this is supposed to be a smartphone. It doesn't seem very smart to me. You know, both of those phrases make me laugh because that's the exact same thing, the attitude that my dad had. When my dad was on the PC team here in Austin, Texas at IBM. And one of the things, you know, he was a lead programmer for IBM's OS2 Lantastic, which was really the first virtual private network secure. He wrote it for banks and he was a lead programmer for that. And it was for connecting, you know, branch banks with a main bank. So someone at a branch bank could log on to their computer and see the exact same network that was at a remote location. That was like a regional office. That was the first time it had ever been done. My dad's, you know, he was there, did that, done that. As a matter of fact, the first program we wrote together, the first PC that we had in our home was 1981. And 8088 had 3 megahertz and 64K of memory and a monochrome screen. I remember I played Dungeons and Dragons on, it was a text, you know, like, you know, pick up axe, hit troll. it was really rudimentary, but it was a game. And, you know, it wasn't graphics. It was all text. It was nothing like the games that we have today. Anyhow, I want to play something for you because that brings back another memory. Because of times changing, and the I guess the value of today's show is that times, there's nothing new under the sun, but technology changes at such an exponential rate that there are things that we cannot even fathom that will exist within 20 years. We may be talking to a computer that actually can have a conversation with you. It's not a bad thing in my book. And some people are afraid of that. You know, they have these visions of Terminator. But before I get that far, let me play this clip from Bill Gates. He said this in 1989 in regards to technology in 1981.
Well, in 1981, the shift to the 16-bit design gave us a megabyte of logical memory. The 8086 has a 20-bit address. It's kind of interesting. It's really a 16-bit data path, but they have these things that are, they call segment registers, or really index registers, where they shift them 4 bits to the left and add that to an offset to create a 20-bit address. And so that's a 1 megabyte address space. And in that original design, I took the upper 384K, decided a certain amount should be for video memory, a certain amount for the ROM and I/O, and that left 640K for general purpose memory. And so that leads to today's situation where people talk about the 640K barrier, the limit of how much memory you can put to these machines. I have to say that in 1981, making those decisions, I felt like I was providing enough freedom for 10 years. That is, a move from 64K to 640K felt like something that would last a great deal of time. Well, it didn't. It took about only 6 years before people started to see that as a real problem. Fortunately, there is a reasonable solution to this, which is that as Intel has moved forward with its chip families, the 286 chip that you find inside the AT introduced in 1984 moves us up to a 24-bit address by treating the second register through a level of indirection. It's actually not that good. So that's sort of an intermediate milestone, you'd have to say. But in 1986, we moved up to what's called the 386, where we get a full 32-bit offset to the even those segments that have been designed in this architecture. So we have a machine that can address 4 gigabytes of memory. And I have to say, with all honesty, I believe that it'll take us more than 10 years to use up that address space.
And he was wrong again. So I'm just talking about exponential changes. What changes do we see in technology and how they impact the roadmap of technology? Where is technology going and where will it be in 20 years from now? I think Bill Gates, you know, he was trying to predict the future on something that's not knowable. And you know that old saying, we don't know about things we don't know about. We don't know anything about nothing, really. And Bill Gates was trying to say, you know, I was predicting that we wouldn't need more than 640K for 10 years. But he built his system around that limitation, and that became the pain point. What will be the pain point in the future? Because what we're talking about now are multiple core processors addressing multiple layers of space, running virtual machines across multiple machines in parallel. Theoretically, you can have a supercomputer sitting on your desktop within a few years from now. And conceivably, because all programming in it, it's not sequential programming. We're talking about object programming. is giving a computer the task to create, to solve a problem, and the computer will write the program for you. You don't have to know code. You just have to know logic. If this, then this, else that. You tell a computer that, and the computer says, okay, no problem. I can do that. And you will see this now today. Actually, Microsoft is doing a pretty good job. They have something in their Office 365 environment called Power Apps and Flow, which is very intuitive of setting up programming based upon logic. Simple logic. And you don't have to be a programmer in order to make a Power App, to connect something to, like, you can connect it to Twitter. So you log into Twitter and you have this Power App that looks at your Twitter stream and looks for all the tweets of everybody that you follow who has one keyword and will automatically reply to them. I mean, that's how there are a few bots, you know, that operate on the internet with regards to Twitter. When you make certain comments that trigger a reaction, and there's an automatic tweet that goes out, and you kind of, well, how'd they do that? Well, they have an application that does that. Well, Microsoft is making that very easy to do. Very easy to do. Now, where does that lead us, though? In terms of physical address space, in terms of our interfacing with technology. The other day, we went to a restaurant, a Japanese restaurant. My wife is prone to taking pictures of her food, and she has a very legitimate reason for doing this, because she wants to remember, you know, what did I eat? She has some health concerns. She's a cancer survivor, about 15 years now. And her body is sensitive to the food that she intakes. So she wants to know or have a record of the food that she eats, so she can point to something that may have caused her an issue. And, you know, whether or not she likes something or not, she loves some food, but she knows she can't have it. But anyhow, we're at dinner, and she's taking pictures of her food. And I know why she's taking pictures. She's taking it for that reason. But I look at the other tables. There was someone who was sitting, you know, on the other side of my wife and was eating alone. And she had this glowing rectangle called a mobile phone in front of her face, and she was swiping at it. That lady did not take her gaze off of that phone. She had a very beautiful meal set in front of her, and it was a Japanese restaurant, sushi rolls. I mean, exquisitely prepared, professional chefs, very expensive dinner. And she didn't even look at her food. She just ate it. There was another group of about six young adults, 20-somethings, on the other side of us. And they were doing something very similar. You know, they had group interactions, but they were interacting amongst themselves and with their phones. Their phones became a part of their experience at this restaurant. And it made me think, you know, about this grandma who had this experience where she had this brand new smartphone and she was confused because it was a mirror. She didn't know what this was. What will we see in the future? What about a bionic implant, an interface, that where you don't have to swipe, you don't have to look down? A bionic implant in the sense that it is something that is projected, say you have a retinal implant or a machine implant that gives directly to the optic nerve. You don't even have to have something displayed in your eyeball. It just goes directly to the brain, displayed on the image that you're seeing through your natural eyesight. And the computer is overlaying information. The person you're talking to, the name, their background. If you can interface and ask a question, Google it. So think about that. Is that possible? I think it is. It's just a matter of building an interface and a communication tool. Anyhow, that's my thoughts for today. I just thought I'd leave you with those couple things about something I thought about today, about life, changes in life, the seasons of life, and our technology, our interfacing with technology, how it impacts our life. Until next time, my name is J.W. Spencer from the back porch at Serenity Ranch. Hasta luego. See ya. Bye-bye.